You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, October 3rd. Into the month, Respect Life Month, month dedicated to the Holy Rosary. All kind of sort of good things going on in October. Also a little trick-or-treat action, All Souls, All Saints and All Souls Day, not too far away. My pleasure to be with you. Hope you had a great weekend. I certainly had a very busy one, but a good one nonetheless. And if you want to tell me about it, give me a shout. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. No shortage of things to talk about today. Today, the feast day of Blessed Columba Marmion, an Irish Dominican priest. We'll talk about him a little bit later. He's a, I think, not well enough known saint. Somebody with a profound love for Christ and the priesthood. We'll talk about him some. Also, why the cross is for victims, too. Some thoughts spurred by an interview I read with a county prosecutor. Rick Becker, who's been on the program before, who writes for the National Catholic Register and also over at the blog God Haunted Lunatic, always thought-provoking, Rick Becker on guardian angels and interrupted rosaries. We'll also recall the Passion of St. Therese, look for virtue in Genesis, and hopefully here in about 30 minutes, get a phone call from my friend, the Reverend Mark Randall, Presbyterian pastor. He's been on the program before. He is actually going to be on his way back from Hazeltine, where he attended the Ryder Cup, which was a pretty rowdy event if you're a golf fan at all. It's, I think, pretty cool to see these golfers who are often so stoic and so single-minded in their individual achievement and pursuits. You know, I mean, that's the nature of professional golf is you no guaranteed contract. You're out there as an individual battling for whatever you can get. It's all significantly different in the Ryder Cup. Patriotism, playing for your team, match play as opposed to medal or stroke play. It was pretty exciting yesterday to see the U.S. beat the Europeans after quite a streak of losses. So my friend Mark Randall was there, and I want to get his firsthand account of what that rowdy experience was like. Certainly, as I said, welcome your calls anytime during the program. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I also got a chili-related question in the next segment as our question of the day. It does not take much. I've been married 28 years. I've learned that it does not take much to prompt my wife, Angie, into making chili. All the temperature has to do is drop below 80. Whoo, feels like chili weather to me before I know it, she's made a big pot. Not that I'm complaining, mind you. We were able to enjoy it over the weekend for sure. Had our parish fall festival this weekend. Some rain on Saturday. That was no fun. But all in all, I think a great experience. My daughter sang as it first opened up, which was certainly nice. Friday night, pretty laid back. Saturday, had with my full-time work responsibilities with the Catholic Diocese, we have an annual wedding anniversary mass the bishop celebrates, in which we invite couples celebrating a jubilee anniversary in that year. And by jubilee anniversary, we define it as 10 years, 25 years, 40 years, 50 years, and 50 plus. And it was pretty remarkable. We honored about 70 couples, married, you're not going to believe this, a total of about 3,200 years. So I told them at the reception, add all those years together, we're going to go back to the time of Moses. Not that I'm saying anything about age. We had three couples. Now, only one was able to be there. Three couples married 70 years. And the bishop made a great point, you know, that the aim of marriage is not that one spouse does all the putting up with another. You know, people say, well, can't believe that she's put up with him all these years. But even in that, there's an endurance there. I talked a little bit at the reception about Saturday's feast day, St. Thérèse of Lisieux, who we'll talk about a little bit later, and that, you know, St. Thérèse is not the only saint in that family. Her parents, Louis and Zélie Martin, beatified. The first married couple, as far as I know, to be beatified. But as I said, that's only the formal beatifications. There have been many informal canonizations when people have said, wow, he must be a saint to put up with her, or vice versa. So anyway, that was a great experience on Saturday. Of course, got to watch a little football on Saturday, and then Sunday, yesterday afternoon, had the opportunity to go out and visit with a good friend of mine who is dying. My friend has a particularly aggressive form of cancer. There's something very sobering about sitting there with a friend when he knows, his family knows, that barring a miracle healing in this life, that he's dying, probably within a matter of, I don't know, months. And to sit there and be in conversation, as I've had happen to me before, you know, the idea was is that I'm going to go out there to encourage him. And of course, God bringing me down several notches, me discovering that it was he who, in fact, encouraged me, particularly because of the grace and the peace of his perspective, his concern for others, his eyes wide open awareness of what's happening to him and to his body, and yet also his confidence and his hope. Not that I'm sure he doesn't have dark days, I'm sure. He's a human being. But there is a strong confidence and hope of being united with Christ, even in death. And he talked about how fortunate he is to know, comparing himself to others who he's known who have not been able to say their goodbyes and all the rest. So keep my friend in your prayers, if you would, and for all those who are suffering with cancer or for other things, and all those who are much more aware than we are of life's temporality on this side of the veil, and the sifting of priorities that should be taking place in all of us who live, unfortunately, at least I do, in a form of denial that we're going to live together. In fact, I want to pray a memorare for my friend and for all those, which is invoking the prayers of the Blessed Mother. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to your protection, implored your help, or sought your intercession was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, we fly unto you, O Virgin of Virgins, our Mother. To you we come, before you we stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not our petition, but in your mercy hear and answer us through Christ our Lord. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I picked up yesterday a little book that we've had lying around the house for probably a couple of years by Peter Kraft. Teaches philosophy up at Boston College. I have a special affection for Peter Kraft because it was his book, Catholic Christianity, based on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It was really one of the first two Catholic books I ever bought and began to read when I realized my interest in the Catholic Church had moved beyond mere intellectual curiosity to attraction. And it was his book, Catholic Christianity, based upon the Catechism of the Church, that gave me what I describe as a panoramic vision of the total integrity of the Catholic faith. Well, this little book is called Jesus Shock by Peter Kraft. And he talks in here about, in one section, the real presence of Christ. He says, of course, with Jesus, the thing that sets Jesus apart from any other historical figure, it was his presence in his person that formed the foundation of truth. Now, you compare that to other religions. The Buddha, for example. The Buddha said, look not to me, look to my Dharma, or my doctrine. But Jesus insisted, come unto me. He wanted people to love him. He didn't say, let me show you a way. He said, I am the way. And Kraft goes on to say that it wasn't just the existence of Jesus that made a difference, because he had always been there, God the Son, from all eternity. Nor was it the power of Jesus or the love of Jesus or the wisdom of Jesus. No, it was the real presence of Jesus that produces what Kraft calls Jesus shock. What is presence? He says, presence is a very easy thing to know and a very hard thing to understand. It's easy to detect. He said, often uneducated people, small children, those who are mentally disabled, they even often detect it better than educated, brilliant people do. For the simple have no hiding places. So he goes on to talk about what it is we as human persons, we're pure spirits, not pure animals. And therefore, let's think about what we mean when we say the real presence. He said, if I accidentally bump into you and knock you down in the street, but do not recognize you and merely utter sincere, oh, I'm sorry, without seeing your face, that's not real presence. Because real presence is not just physical. But if I'm thinking about you personally, even loving you with both will and emotion, but you're thousands of miles away from me, that's not real presence either. You are absent. Real presence is not just mental presence, presence to mind and will and emotions. We'll pick this up at the second hour because it has implications how we understand a key aspect of the Catholic faith. We'll be back with our question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Just go to breadboxmedia.com. You can see a little clip there about what our aim is here, to share the good news of Jesus Christ and his love in an accompanying sort of way as we walk together and journey together toward a better understanding of who Christ is and what his desires are for us, as well as to share the beauty and the richness that we found in the church he founded upon St. Peter and the Apostles. We do that through live streaming, which you can access through an app for your digital device, or just go online and whatever device you may have. We also have podcasting, and that's a great way to discover some of the different personalities we have on the network here from all across the country and across the heartland. You can check it out at breadboxmedia.com or listen to a podcast through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. You could subscribe and also become a friend of your favorite show through monthly support. Show your appreciation for that program and access some exclusive online content. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. My question of the day, I talked in the first segment about how my wife, Angie, needs little excuse to make a pot of chili. And over the weekend, we ate on a huge pot because she never makes a small pot. Usually, at least, we're talking 3 or 4 pounds of ground beef. I mean, we've got a big family, but even so, that pot of chili lasted us the whole weekend. One of our special things you put in the chili typically is beer. None of us in our family really drinkers, but we love to put beer in the chili. Some of you may say, cut out the middleman, just drink the beer while you eat the chili. I can get that too, but nothing like that beer flavor in your chili. So that's my question today. When you make a pot of chili, what do you put in it? And smart aleck, I'm not asking you to say a spoon. Okay, so what do you put in the chili? Because we all have our own distinctive recipes, and I'm not asking for you to divulge some family secret here, but, you know, what are some of the things that you want in it?
some responses we've gotten, by the way, if you want to call or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a response on Facebook or Twitter, Mike Allen Show the handle, as some of these folks have done. Ellen says, spaghetti, cheese, onions, and sour cream for toppings. So good. Spaghetti or pasta and chili, that's one of those issues few people are neutral about. Some people love, some people hate. My friend John says, beef, at least 2 pounds, preferably shoulder, a little pork, interestingly enough, onions, garlic, 5 to 10 diced jalapenos, a handful of ancho chilies, one serrano, some cilantro, a little cumin, and about a teaspoon of oregano. Well, John's giving us a recipe. He says, yes, I've gone native in San Antonio. No, that Cincinnati-influenced meat soup y'all eat isn't chili. We're just down the road where we broadcast from, about 75 miles from Cincinnati. And Cincinnati famous for a little cinnamon taste in their chili. John, obviously not a fan. Sarah says, I'll always add some spiced up tomato paste. I'll share a couple more answers a little bit later in the program. Again, if you want to chime in on that, it's a good time of year for chili. 573-4BREAD-4, or you could email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. No, nothing but hard-hitting questions here on the Mike Allen Show. It was a huge sports weekend, by the way. I mean, the final weekend of the baseball regular season. You had college football, some really big games this weekend. The NFL, of course. And then you had an event that I love, and here in less than 15 minutes, we'll be having on to the program my friend Mark Randall, the Reverend Mark Randall, Presbyterian pastor, associate pastor at a large Presbyterian church here in Lexington. But he's been up in Hazeltine in Minnesota at the Ryder Cup, watching the U.S. play the Europeans, as they do every 2 years. And the U.S. on quite a losing streak against the Europeans. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 times. And it was the parts of the Ryder Cup I watched this weekend, incredibly passionate. I mean, like I said, you're used to seeing these golfers very stoic. Part of my critique of the current PGA Tour is there seems to be very little personality. Well, that changed with the Ryder Cup. Makes you wish they played it more often. And my friend Mark Randall was there in the midst of it. I got to ask him what his experience was like, especially that Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy showdown. That was some incredible stuff, I have to say. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in on that, if you watch the Ryder Cup this weekend, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Anyway, it was also Vin Scully's last weekend. Broadcasting. He's been a broadcaster for the Los Angeles Dodgers since they were in Brooklyn, believe it or not. And he finally gave up the mic last night, had to unfortunately call a series in which the Dodgers got swept. I say that unfortunate for Van, not unfortunate for me, because as you know, I don't like the St. Louis Cardinals. And the Giants sweeping that series against the Dodgers means that the Giants make the playoffs and the Cardinals do not. So I hate, you know, but Vin Scully still gets, I mean, there's playoff baseball. I'm not sure whether he's going to be calling the playoffs for the Dodgers or not, but that was his last regular season game anyway. And now you've got the Dodgers, Giants, Mets, Cubs, and Nationals. Cubs have to be considered the favorite in the National League, but San Francisco, who has won the last 3 World Series in even-numbered years, a force to be reckoned with. And then if you go over to the AL, I guess right now you have to look at the Boston Red Sox as the team to beat. I don't know what to tell you, Cubs fans. I know you're excited. Your team had a great regular season, over 100 wins. But talk to the Seattle Mariners from however many years ago when they won 114, I think it was, and failed to win the World Series. Playoff baseball is a whole new season. And there are no givens in baseball. And I'm afraid there's a possibility. I mean, believe me, I wouldn't mind seeing the Cubs win the World Series at all. I mean, 1908, that's a long time to wait. But I'm afraid that their fans could be set up for an even more bitter disappointment than the Steve Bartman years. or year. So I don't know. If you got a pick on that, you want to let me know what you think, shoot me an email, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Just an update on my friend. I say friend. He doesn't know me from Adam, but Joseph Daniel Votto of the Cincinnati Reds. I've been keeping you posted on his quest to become only the fourth player in the last 75 years to hit 400 for the second half of the season. And I want to say something. Okay, Joey Votto did it. And here's, I'm wearing actually today a Reds shirt. It's got a little Cincinnati Reds symbol emblazoned over the breast. And I'm wearing it proudly for Joseph Daniel Votto, not for the Reds, who were not a very good team this year, of course. But here's the thing I especially appreciate about Joey Votto. And I want to contrast Joey Votto with another player, DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu, who had, I think, a 1 percentage point lead over Daniel Murphy for the batting title in the National League. Daniel Murphy has set out for the last couple of weeks with the Washington Nationals with an injury. DJ LeMahieu decides, with the support of his manager, to sit out Saturday and Sunday so he would not lose his lead in the batting race. Joey Votto, meanwhile, going up against one of the best pitching staffs, if not the best pitching staff in baseball, could have sat out the weekend as well. Season's a foregone conclusion and so forth. But Joey Votto instead plays. He gets 3 hits on Saturday, ends up with a .408 average for the season's second half. So, you know, DJ LeMahieu, you got that batting title, but you will always live with the knowledge that you played it safe and set out. I just got a problem with that. Big college football action. The biggest game, I think, was Clemson's win over Louisville. That was an exciting game. Wow. And now, unfortunately, well, I say unfortunately for Louisville fans, you know me as a Kentucky fan, not sad to say Louisville's chances of making the college football playoff took a big hit with that loss. Not necessarily fair, but it is what it is. Okay, let's get on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day, because we've got a few we're going to sneak in here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Talk to my friend Mark Randall. Main man, go dumb or go home, as we say on the What Were You Thinking segment. Main man accused of trying to pass off food carton as inspection sticker. The inspection sticker has a little barcode on the front of it, a legitimate one. This guy obviously cut out part of a food carton and taped it with a magic marker number up on his windshield, hoping to fool somebody. You got to appreciate his creativity anyway. So that's number one. My goodness, with all the internet technology, that's the best you could come up with for a fake. Number two, and I always love the dumb criminal story. It's from Des Moines, Iowa. Des Moines police say a high-speed chase ended when the suspect accidentally shot out his own tires. Police attempted to stop 24-year-old Taylor Parker for a traffic violation. The man allegedly took off and led people on a short pursuit. While still driving, he threw a shotgun out of the car, and the gun then fired off a round, shooting out the tires of the car he was driving. I guess he was trying to ditch any evidence through the shotgun out the window, and then it fired and blew out the tires in his own car. He then jumped out of the car, took off on foot, and was eventually caught by the officer. Oh, my goodness. We're going to have to wait on our winner a little bit later in the hour. Has to do with a cake and a taser. never any shortage. We'll be back with my friend, the Reverend Mark Randall. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome
at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, October 3rd. Pleased to have with me via phone somewhere on the dark interstate coming back from Hazeltine Golf Course in Minnesota, where he was there watching the Ryder Cup, my good friend and Presbyterian pastor, the Reverend Mark Randall. Mark, you still with us? Good morning. So 13-hour drive by yourself back from the Ryder Cup, man. Be careful. Well, tell me really. So tell me how this trip materialized and your opportunity to go see the Ryder Cup.
Yeah. Full disclosure, my brother lives in Minneapolis and works for a large corporation. And in 2009, the PGA was at Hazeltine also, and I did the exact same thing then, where his company got 100 tickets. They had a chalet in a little private box right above number 8, which is a par 3. Now, Hazeltine flipped the front nine and back nine for the Ryder Cup because with the Ryder Cup, the matches don't always go through hole number 18. So, you know, what used to be number 1 was number 10 and vice versa. So I was on number 8 in a corporate chalet for all 3 days of the Ryder Cup. And I'm not going to lie, it was pretty sweet.
Oh, my goodness.
I saw incredible golf. But really, just being part of the whole experience was amazing.
Now, had you been to a Ryder Cup before?
I'd never been to a Ryder Cup. I went to the PGA, same course, was 7 years ago. And then when the Ryder Cup was in Louisville, I did go to a practice round. What's that? I guess 8 years ago, something like that. And that was pretty cool. Just because it was in Louisville, but it's different. Practice around the real thing are a little different.
So I have to ask you. I mean, you've been to a PGA, one of the majors, where they're playing sort of individually. Most of them fairly stoic. Then you've been to this, more like probably an English soccer match. Describe the difference in the atmosphere between the two
rowdy
events.
I was not aware just how bad it was on Saturday until I got home and saw SportsCenter and read the local Minneapolis paper that Rory was complaining about how he was being taunted. But, man, based on what I saw, those Europeans love to taunt as much as anybody. And the Americans did, too. And I never saw anything that was inappropriate. I read the paper where one fan was ejected because of something he yelled at Rory. Everything I saw was a ton of fun, laughter. But it is unusual in golf where you clap openly when somebody misses the putt. But in the Ryder Cup, it's common. And we were kind of joking that you almost have to assume as the Ryder Cup continues that people are going to start yelling during the backswing or something like that and violate all golf rules. I don't know if that'll happen or not.
Miss it, noon, and miss. Miss it, noon, and miss.
Sure. But I love watching golf, and I don't go to many live golf events. And to be perfectly frank, watching it on TV is a whole lot better than being there. Because I didn't see that much golf unless I went back inside the chalet and watched it on television.
Right, oh, sure. I that one hole, and I didn't see it. I missed several hours of the coverage yesterday, but that one hole, that Rory McIlroy Patrick Reed matchup, because both those guys extremely passionate. I think it was the 8th hole.
That's right. That's where I was.
So you saw you saw Rory hit the 60 footer.
Oh yeah, I saw that and had a great business, great spot at the whole thing. And Rory, that's what I mean. He was antagonizing the crowd as much as the crowd was heckling him.
Yeah, he hit that 60-foot putt. He puts his hands behind his ears.
More than ever.
He puts his hands behind his ears. He's like, I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Yeah, that's right. I love it.
Well, what was cool is then that Reed then steps up and hits whatever 30-footer. And then he's wagging his finger at Rory and, you know, bowing to the crowd. And then they go over and they fist bump and they pat each other on the back.
Well, I didn't know if that was on TV or not, but if you could see it live, they clearly were buddy and enjoying every second of it because they fist bumped and they walked off the green together. Yeah, one of the fascinating things, is when you see players come through, and the Ryder Cup's unique because on Friday and Saturday, there are only four groupings coming. Like, if you're at a normal PGA event, it's you know, two groups going through all day long. But it's just four. And then yesterday, ever how many groups there were, so you would basically go to one hole, watch everybody go through, then go to another hole. But one of the more intriguing parts to me was to see the entourage of all the people who are with the players. And in the Ryder Cup, the wives of the players are also in uniform, and they matched. So the European wives matched, the American wives matched. And it was different every day. But then you have kind of, you know, various celebrities that were part of the entourage. I saw Darius Rucker, the country music singer. He was part of Dustin Johnson's crew. I have no idea what the connection was, but there's Darius Rucker. Tiger Woods was part of the entourage. It's one of the assistant coaches, captains. You just never knew who all you might see, and they would be walking inside the rail. And that's kind of cool to watch. You don't see that stuff on TV.
Did you get to meet anybody?
Only those people inside the corporate box. You know, I posted a picture on Facebook, and I actually had several old buddies who were either there at the tournament or who lived in the Minneapolis area. I had a fraternity pledge brother who I haven't seen since 1993, and he was there on Sunday, and we texted the whole time, but it was so crowded, we actually didn't have a chance to catch up. But I didn't meet anybody famous. Ben Crenshaw walked by our box. My sister-in-law got a picture taken with him because they're both University of Texas graduates. But I didn't see anybody like that.
Well, I mean, there's another way to look at it. I mean, they didn't get a chance to meet you. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, I think that's the way they interpreted it as well.
Absolutely. Talk about the setting there. I know, of course, I'm sure it's not a very beautiful place to be in, say, November through March, but it looked like a gorgeous course.
But I'm telling you, there's Minneapolis in late summer and fall is incredible. And Hazeltine Golf Course. It's on TV. I've watched a fair amount on TV. It looked great, but it was gorgeous being there. There's a small little lake there that hole number 7 got a signature hole. It's right on the lake, and just the whole thing is incredible. Being there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I walked the entire course at least once or twice. And on Saturday, when all the players had gone through, I kind of took off and went the other direction to where I was walking where there was no one. And then yesterday morning I got there early and walked basically the whole front nine. Because what most folks will do is you'll get to a hole a couple of hours in advance to kind of set up shop. You got a chair, picking supplies, all of that, and wait for them to come. But because my little corporate box, I did all of that. I then went up to my reserve spot to fully take advantage of what was given to me.
Well, let's give thanks, of course, where thanks is due. I mean, your congregation, and your senior pastor giving you the leeway to travel, so that was nice.
That was nice, and apparently I was made fun of from the pulpit yesterday.
That's
I did receive a couple messages from folks. I think in good jest.
That's always a danger when you're away. People could talk about you.
And that's right, man. That's okay. I'm a blessed man.
Absolutely, and you know, I'm sure one of the interesting. I mean, I think you know, typically you hear about a lot of guys on the PGA Tour, both American and European, who are Christians. You know, and probably
yeah, I think that's right. I've heard that from a lot of folks. I know I follow a guy named Webb Simpson on Twitter, and he did not make the Ryder Cup. I haven't heard a whole lot from him in the last couple of years, but I know he's a believer, and I think that's quite a bit of influence on other folks as well. I did see J.B. Holmes yesterday, and I yelled, "Go Big Blue, number 8," and I'm confident he did not hear me.
J.B. Holmes, a University of Kentucky grad, yeah, the guy, and
that's right,
great PGA player. Mark, please be careful on the road. Get your family
Will
wants
do,
you
Mike.
Back safe, and thanks for taking the time to chime in. And we need to get you back on the show, and
I look forward to it.
Talk Any faith time. And football, maybe before the Kentucky Tennessee game.
All right, sounds good.
Be careful. Bye. All right, all right.
Uh-huh.
It's my friend Mark Randall, associate pastor at Tate's Creek Presbyterian Church here in Lexington, Kentucky, on his 13-hour, possibly 14-hour trek back to Central Kentucky after traveling to go to the Ryder Cup with his brother. That's a great story. You know, you're in a situation like that, you think, man, am I going to make that drive just to go watch a golf tournament? But, you know, he'll have that memory forever. And congratulations to the USA with a big win. We'll be back with more. This is The Mike Allen Show. You listen to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Mania. My question of the day, you make a bowl of chili or a pot of chili or a vat of chili like my wife did this weekend. What do you like to put in it besides a spoon? I knew somebody was going to say that, right? So I want to disarm that right from the very beginning. Are you, you put beans, you put peppers, you put cinnamon, you put beer, peppers. I'd love to hear from you. 5734 bread 4, mainly because I'm looking for a good chili recipe. 5734 bread 4, though my wife's is the bomb diggity. 5734 bread 4. You can email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com or post a reply on Facebook or on Twitter. They really enjoy talking to my friend Mark Randall there. That must have been something else up there at the Ryder Cup. Patrick Reed, who I was not that familiar with, he and Rory McIlroy, it was very entertaining to watch. Even if you hate golf, I think you would have enjoyed the passion. It's just nice to see those guys, know that they're out for something bigger than themselves, in my opinion. Okay, let's get to our What Were You Thinking winner. We gave our two nominees. This has got to be the winner. Again, go dumb or go home. A former Florida sheriff's deputy, why is it always Florida, is being sued for allegedly tasing a woman while off duty, without provocation, while off duty, and lying about the incident in an effort to cover up, despite having baked the woman a cake with the message, "Sorry I tased you," written on it. You know, I'm sure that bakeries get all sorts of strange requests for messages to be written on cakes, but my guess is "sorry I tased you" is not one they get often. Actually, if you look at the cake, it looks like he did a homemade version of it, which she took a photo of. That's not going to help you in court, officer. And even drew a little picture of a male officer holster and pistol by his side, tasing a woman who has a screaming look on her face. Crazy. Evidently, the claim is that Michael Wohlers entered the apartment complex where she works after one of his patrol shifts ended and began to intimidate, harass, and threaten the plaintiff about her personal life. The suit alleges that at one point, Michael Wohlers took her sweet tea and refused to give it back. When Byron approached Wohlers in an attempt to retrieve the beverage, he discharged his stun gun into her chest and throat.
While she was on the ground, he jumped onto Ms. Byron, kneeing her in the chest and forcefully removing the taser prods. Let's just say inexcusable behavior. But to make matters worse for yourself, you bake a cake that says, "Sorry, I tased you." Oh, my goodness. So that's the winner. That's got to be one of the all-time greats right there, or worst, let's just say. All right, let's look back in history a little bit. October 3rd, throughout the ages, what are some other things that have happened? Let's see. In 1849, American author Edgar Allan Poe was found delirious in a gutter in Baltimore under mysterious circumstances. It's the last time he's seen in public before his death. No doubt a troubled soul. But Edgar Allan Poe, though, wrote one of the most beautiful poems, even though he himself not Catholic, to Our Lady, to the Blessed Virgin Mary, you'll ever read. 1863, President Abraham Lincoln declared the last Thursday in November Thanksgiving Day. It'll be here before we know it. 1929, the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes changed its name to the Kingdom of Yugoslavia. It was not a... That artificial uniting of the various groups didn't really work out too well, did it? 75 years ago, Adolf Hitler declared in a speech in Berlin that Russia had been broken and would never rise again. Unfortunately, Der Führer discovered it was his ill-conceived attack on Soviet Russia that led to his own downfall. 1951, 65 years ago, Bobby Thompson hit the shot heard round the world, three-run home run in a playoff game to send the New York Giants into the World Series, beating the Dodgers, I believe. Some interesting premieres in TV history. Captain Kangaroo and the Mickey Mouse Club on this day in 1955. The Andy Griffith Show in 1960 and the Dick Van Dyke Show in 1961. 26 years ago, West Germany and East Germany declared the creation of a new unified country. And 40 years ago, Hank Aaron singled in his last at bat, drove in his 2,297th run. And Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson married on this day in 1992. Happy anniversary, Mr. President and First Lady, 24 years. O.J. Simpson found innocent on this day 22 years ago. Still looking for the real killer, I guess. And finally, on this day in 2005, George W. Bush nominated White House counsel Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court. Myers withdrew 3 weeks later. I keep hearing this about the Supreme Court, and you know, this is the reason that a good Catholic has to vote for Donald Trump. I keep hearing this over and over again, despite the next thing that comes out about Donald Trump, like the fact that he was in a soft porn movie. There's a conservative columnist by the name of Nancy French. She and her husband both are very active conservative writers. Nancy French came out with a piece that I ended up posting on my Facebook page, 24 sexually creepy, questionable, or inexcusable things Donald Trump has done to women. Now, usually the response that I'm discovering to this, to those who want to excuse Mr. Trump's behavior, which, and as I've said, and I'll say it again, I can vote for neither major party candidate in this presidential race. Sorry, it's a Monday. I can vote for neither major party presidential candidate. Somebody asked me about whether there's a link to the soft porn movie. There is. Absolutely. My friend Tim Stanley, who's a regular guest on the program, writes for the London Daily Telegraph, wrote a whole piece about it. It's stunning the sort of logical gymnastics that I hear a lot of people using, that not only is it okay to vote for Donald Trump, that if you really are pro-life and you're a Catholic or Christian, you got to vote for Donald Trump. Well, Nancy French, as I said, whose conservative bona fides are without question, wrote this article, 24 sexually creepy, questionable, or inexcusable things Donald Trump has done to women. And I posted that with a comment, as a father of five daughters, I would refuse to vote for Donald Trump, even if I agreed with all his policy positions, which, of course, I don't. Probably more than likely, there's a number of policy positions that I agree with him that I disagree with Hillary Rodham Clinton about. But here's the oftentimes what I usually hear is either the response to these sorts of things about Donald Trump is the tu quoque. In other words, oh, yeah, well, Hillary, too. She's as bad, or Bill Clinton's as bad. And therefore, it's as if we don't then shouldn't talk about Trump. No, they're both. I agree. I can't vote for either of them. Not only for Hillary Clinton's policy positions, particularly on issues like abortion and religious freedom, for example, but you know, her husband, who would be back in the White House, Bill Clinton, is a sexual predator. I think that's been or has been over the course of his adult life. I think that's pretty hard to dispute. So you've got that situation, and now you've got Trump, and you read this list from Nancy French. It's very troubling and disturbing. But here's the other response usually given is, oh, the Supreme Court. It's all about the Supreme Court. He's being influenced. He'll appoint pro-life justices and so forth. Well, let me tell you something. The pro-life goes beyond simply being anti-abortion, which I'm not even convinced that Donald Trump is anti-abortion. I mean, he said nothing about abortion in his nomination acceptance speech. Nothing. Nor do I think it's going to be a priority item on his agenda. And I never understand that, well, God has the power to change hearts. Well, that's true of anybody. It says in Proverbs, what a stream of the king's heart is a stream of water in the hand of the Lord. Of course. But he won't violate his freedom. But here, the pro-life ethos is rooted in this fundamental principle. It's not that we're just anti-abortion. It's that we're for the dignity of the person made in the image and likeness of God. Donald Trump's conduct, and particularly his conduct toward women, is a complete contradiction of the dignity of the human person. The availability, the legality of abortion is ultimately largely driven by the viewing of a woman as simply a sexual object. And we've got to have a solution available for when one of the true intrinsic parts of femininity, the ability to conceive and bear a child, becomes problematic to our sexual liberty. That's the issue that drives so much of the abortion thing. And so to somehow disconnect it from Donald Trump's personal behavior, it's hard for me to even, I don't know what to say. The mental gymnastics on this issue. Nobody can do the hard work of conscience for you. We all have to do it. I'm just saying that for me, please don't tell me that it's my Christian duty to vote for Donald Trump in this election, because, like I said, as a father of daughters, I can't do it. I'm looking at the American Solidarity Party. Write-in candidate Michael Maturin, who's, I'm not sure how many states he's on the ballot in. He is in our ballot. We'll be back with a new hour, including a conversation with Rick Becker about the rosary, interrupted rosaries and guardian angels. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.